Brad Sessmatt Show, broadcasting live from the Skyview Network Studios.
It's a good Monday. We have a busy day, busy show in front of us from a weekend that politically was charged, obviously. From Friday, I watched all the way through every last bit of what went on with the departure of the Obamas and the Trumps coming into the office, and then Saturday, the Women's March. And by yesterday, I was just ready for some sports, for crying out loud. Saturday actually did take in some of, not some of, all of U of A and UCLA on the DVR Saturday night, not Saturday. It was too nice of a day, and I was coaching. And then yesterday, the two games were not very good. I mean, if you're a Patriots fan, you're thrilled. If you're a Falcons fan, you were thrilled. But, I mean, you guys tell me, was that really AFC, NFC championship football? We have a Super Bowl that is set. So far, it's been underwhelming in terms of ticket demand. That will pick up, of course. The narrative will change. The PR side will come out for the NFL, and that's all well and good. Bob Ryan's going to be with us here in about 10 minutes. Bob is going to join us, of course, the longtime Boston Globe columnist, now Boston Globe columnist emeritus. Bob Ryan, after nearly 30 years as part of the sports reporters, it came out this morning that ESPN is canceling that long-running show, terrific show, through the years. And we'll talk with Bob Ryan about the Patriots being in the Super Bowl. None better from Boston than Bob Ryan. News and notes with Paula Bovin, AZ Central sports columnist. Always good to catch up with Paula on things going around on around the great state of Arizona, things over the weekend. I think from what Eric told me, she did march on Saturday, so I want to talk to her about that. In the U of A, UCLA game, and so on and so forth. Daryl Johnston, NFL on Fox, will be with us today. NFL on Fox analyst. The two blowout games yesterday, and now the Super Bowl matchup is set. We'll talk with Moose Johnston. That is all on today's show. Good show on tap. And from there, let's get into some of what happened over the weekend. And I want to start with on the Super Bowl, and that the Patriots are favored by 3. The total is 58. Look, I look at Julio Jones, and if you remember, we'll get into this through the week, in the next 2 weeks, actually. Remember Julio Jones, how Atlanta gave up a boatload to get Julio Jones. And that Matt Ryan, some of you Cardinal fans in the last year were saying, you know, Matt Ryan's just really not coming into age, and you know, he's the guy that's going to be the replacement to Carson Palmer. And no, that's not happening, okay? That's simply not happening. Now that he's figuring things out in his ninth season, he's got Kyle Shanahan by his side, and he's got a new coach down there, and they've changed the culture, and he's got some terrific parts. What was it yesterday we were watching during the game, and the Falcons starting center, Alex Mack, was a very good player, Pro Bowl player with the Browns, and Taylor Gabriel, the wide receiver, was with the Browns. And of course, the Browns are just flat putrid. They're just flat awful, and so they can't figure things out. And they go to Atlanta and they're going to the Super Bowl. Where was Michael Floyd yesterday? I thought, you know, Sean Spicer could have stepped up yesterday and put a picture. Michael Floyd was terrific today. I thought about putting that on Twitter, you know, all the Sean Spicer stuff. Michael Floyd did 0 yesterday. Wasn't around yesterday. Nowhere to be found yesterday. Chris Hogan was, though. Chris Hogan is a lacrosse player. As we say all along, it's not the first round picks. It's not the fifth round picks. It's when you find these guys that come out of the blue. And Chris Hogan, how many of you had Chris Hogan on your fantasy team looking for hands here? He was terrific, of course. He was the difference maker for the Patriots in their passing game. Brady found him over and over and over. Ben Roethlisberger is now 0-4 against Tom Brady. If you're a Steeler fan today, what is the story on that front? If you're an Aaron Rodgers fan today. So Aaron Rodgers basically dropped the bomb on the Packers after the game yesterday, saying our defense isn't getting it done. So let's get our defense and let's get after. Even Troy Aikman said yesterday that the Packers have drafted, and I'm sure this came through the production meeting. I'm absolutely sure of it, that Aaron Rodgers or somebody said to Aikman, we're just not getting it done on defense. Because Aikman said yesterday, second half, late in the game, the Packers spent a high draft pick on Demarius Randle. He has not gotten it done. Not picking on Demarius Randle, facts are facts. Did he get torched yesterday? Yes, he did, as did the entire Packers secondary. So the Packers are out. I like the new blood of Atlanta myself. Me? Yeah, this is interesting. Sure, we all want to see New England win just for that magical moment where Roger Goodell is having to hand a trophy and make a speech to Tom Brady. We all want to see that. That may be more highly rated than even the halftime show. I don't know. But that's what the, you know, that's the intrigue around all of this. I don't have a problem with the Patriots being back here. I'm fine with New England being back. And I'm fine having some new blood in Atlanta. I think if you're a Cardinal fan today, you've got to look at your roster. And you look at your roster and you say, okay, are we an ascending roster or are we descending? This whole thought of they can go out and compete again next year, I still believe that. But man, after watching the Packers and the Falcons, the Cardinals have got to get a better defense. You know, I'm more the mindset, let's draft somebody in the secondary if I'm in the Cardinals' shoes. Let's go after a corner to put across Patrick Peterson. We've got to get better because Atlanta is so much better with their receiving core than what's here in Arizona. That's a fact. It's not a swipe towards Larry. It's just a fact. Larry's at the end. Julio Jones is in the middle. So that was interesting to me. The U of A basketball game, I'll talk to Paula about this a little bit later in the on. I wrote yesterday, actually Saturday night, that the game itself, U of A beats UCLA. It was the most entertaining basketball game I've seen on the season. It's been a terrific basketball season on the college front. We hear this narrative of, yeah, these games in November and December really don't mean that much. There's not really good matchups. I don't know. We've had some fun stuff go on here. Louisville comes here to play GCU. We find out Louisville's not really that good this year. GCU gives them a run for their money. Arizona State had Creighton come here. Creighton is a team that I think is built to go deep into the tournament. Eric and I go down to Tucson. We watch the U of A-ASU game. It was not a contest in any way, shape, or form. But it was interesting for me to see Lauri Markkanen up close. If I'm the Suns, I would like Lauri Markkanen on my team. The timing of bringing Alonzo Trier back, of course, it's for the biggest game. It wouldn't be against Oregon State. It's got to be against UCLA. Timing was, you know, it's always interesting when these things get cleared up. So there's Trier on the court against UCLA. And U of A now has 9 players. And U of A looks really good, but I'm one of those that's always, let's tap the brakes here. It is late January, third week in January. It was the best game nationally over the weekend. I watched Villanova. They were fine. They look like a number one team. But I think if U of A gets some things straightened out, there's some patches where it wasn't perfect. That you could see U of A get things straight. Now, really in the Pac-12, you've got Oregon, even though Dylan Brooks has an ankle injury, it's not a fracture, it's not a break, that's good news. He's terrific. If he's healthy, then I think Oregon is a Final Four team. Now that Trier is back with U of A, I think they have the potential to be a Final Four team. With Lonzo Ball, who of all the players that are on the court, and I'm looking at what the Suns roster is shaped like right now, Lonzo Ball's the guy that I want next year. I'll take Lonzo Ball over anybody. He's terrific. He's great. He's so much fun to watch. But those are the three teams really in the Pac-12. And with the Final Four here in late March, those are the guys that I'd like to look at and take a closer look at. So from my point of view over the weekend, it was nice win. Let's not make too much out of it. We have a habit behind these microphones, front of cameras. I saw it on Twitter, guys that are on the air cheerleading. It's embarrassing. You know, it's we're not here to cheerlead. We're just not. And they're good teams. I think they can all beat Villanova, all three of them. But get back to me when UCLA goes down to Tucson, and then get back to me when UCLA plays U of A in all likelihood in the semis or the finals up in Las Vegas in early March at the Pac-12 tournament. That was a highlight. The Suns kind of screwed things up here, guys. They beat the Knicks, although Carmelo had a shot that went all the way down and then came out. They beat the Knicks off that. Then they go to Toronto yesterday and they win. They've won like 2 of 3. What are they thinking? You want to get Lonzo Ball. You want to lose. Continue to suck. It's been, what is it, May 29th of 2010 was the last time you guys had a playoff game. May 29th, 2010. Last time we had a playoff game here in Phoenix. And so this team is not built to make it into the playoffs this year. If they sneak in, am I going to say we're looking at progress? No. So the Suns do take 2 of 3, and they're back home against Minnesota tomorrow night. All right, so other things I'll get to, but Bob Ryan is next. We'll talk with Bob Ryan live here on the show. After nearly 30 years, Sports Reporters is coming to an end. Sports columnist emeritus with the Boston Globe on the Patriots making the Super Bowl. All with Bob Ryan. That's on the other side. I'm Brad Sismat. 360 AZ. We partner with the Arizona Republic AZ Central Sports. Our television show on Fox Sports, Brad Sismat Football AZ, airs Tuesday through Thursday nights. We have 14 airings this week. We look forward to being involved in that. This morning, I started getting notes very early once it was tweeted out that the Sports Reporters is going to end over on ESPN in May after nearly 30 years. A lot of you are upset by this. And then we have the Super Bowl on top of it. So we tracked down Bob Ryan, sports columnist emeritus for the Boston Globe, and of course, a big part of the Sports Reporters for 30 years with the Patriots and the Super Bowl and much, much more. Good to have Bob on the show. Bob, it's Brad Sismat. How are you?
Hey, Brad. I'm good. Thank you.
Good, good. Just reactions, Bob, to this. Was this a surprise today about the Sports Reporters? Did you know this was coming?
No. Found out Saturday. I was informed by the producer, the man who owns the show, Joe Valerio. And, of course, I was surprised that we did not have a direct warning. Now, as we look back upon the events at the network over the last several weeks and months, and the trend of how the type of programming that is in vogue these days, I can see how we were vulnerable without maybe a major patron to protect our interests. I'm not stunned by it when I look at the big picture. I'm disappointed. I have been a part of it since 1989. 28 years, and I've been pretty proud to be a part of it, and I think it's occupied a nice niche in the sports talk world that is not going to be replaced by anybody that I see because the tenor of the day is more shrill, as you know.
Yep.
It's more
yep.
Combative. I mean, I'm on my way. It's so funny we do this now. I am pulling into the studio where I do Around the Horn, and Around the Horn is a vastly different tenor of program, as is, of course, PTI, and then, of course, more significantly, as is First Take. And they're different type of approaches to the sports world than that we took in with Sports Reporters. And maybe it's just deemed that that measured calm, almost professorial or meet the press approach is passe. I don't know. But that's a story, and I'm trying to digest it. You know, it's only the third day, and now the reaction is coming in now that it's been made public.
Yeah. Well, and the whole idea of shrill, as you put it, and embrace debate, well, it's not really debate if it's just let's make it all about race or let's make it all about religion or let's make it all about sex versus what's going on the field. And it feels to me is that that's where we are now in this industry on a lot of shows. Not every show, obviously, but we've got to push it to new areas, and that this show, they just looked at and put it on the chopping block. And I still think there's a place for it. Do you think that retooling, going to a different distributor, Bob, or things that you would consider doing?
That's up to Joe Valerio. He owns the rights to the show. One of the interesting things about the show was that, and I always used to joke about it, that it did always drive ESPN crazy that they didn't own the show. They bought the show. And they exerted their will on the show in different ways of personnel and moved us when the ESPN Zone restaurant closed in 2010. We had been doing for a number of years doing the show from Broadway and 42nd Street at the ESPN restaurant. So they could easily have allowed us to remain in New York and use the ABC studio, but they chose to relocate us to Bristol. And I thought that it was a control thing. And so we adjusted and did the show from Bristol since I've been doing it since 2010, after 20 years of doing it in New York City. And it changed who could come and how often and so on and so forth. It didn't affect me in the least. I was able to come as regularly either way, but it was different. They always had a little desire to get their fingers on the show a little more than, ultimately they could do whatever they wanted, you know, and now they finally have. So, but I'm not bitter. My God, I got 28 years out of this. The second most important thing ever happened to me and professionally. The first was to get hired by the Boston Globe as a summer intern in 1968, and that led to a 44-year career there. And the second was to get a phone call from Joe Valerio, who had the rights to purchase the rights to this year-old program back in 89, and would I like to be on this show. And I've been on the show ever since. Obviously, I have no right to complain. I'm disappointed. I would have liked to see it continue, but it's television. We've outlived the norm. You know, it's got to be the longest running show on ESPN other than SportsCenter itself.
Now that's true. That's true. Dick Schaap, what was it like to work with him on Sundays?
A marvel. Dick Schaap was the best writer among all broadcasters in sports were, and the best sportscaster among all writers. He wrote 30-some books, and most of them were not about sports. And nobody's famous for collaborating with Jerry Kramer and Instant Replay and doing many other books. And he was Mr. New York. He used to joke that he was the only person, he then and now, the only person who voted for both the Tony and the Heisman. Because while he was also doing his sportscaster stuff, he was also the theater critic for Channel 4 in New York. And he was a man about town in New York. He was an ultimate cosmopolitan New Yorker, lived up in New Park in between, right off Central Park in the 60s in New York. And he was the ultimate New Yorker, born and raised in Long Island, and just knew everybody in all walks of life, whether it was politics, entertainment, or sports, and was a witty guy. We have the thing, the parting shot, as you know, the last segment in which we have a little commentary. And he could say more in 30 seconds than anybody else can say in a minute. He was a genius, and we miss him dearly. And we were so fortunate when he did die that John Saunders was available to us to host the show. And we were similarly stunned, in fact, more stunned in a sense, because Dick was in the hospital. And we knew things were not going well. But John was like, one day he's here and the next day he's not. It was stunning. We'll never get over that.
Bob Ryan is with us with Brad Susmat. After nearly 30 years, Sports Reporters has been canceled. It'll happen in May. Let's shift gears over to the New England Patriots now, Bob. And from a distance, we're out here in Arizona, and we go a lot of different ways with our television show in the Midwest and Southwest part of the country. Michael Floyd leaves Arizona and goes to New England. And I was going to make a joke yesterday about Sean Spicer saying Michael Floyd played really well. How's that worked? You know, I mean, how's that worked out in New England, first of all, with Michael Floyd, just to make it very Arizona-centric here for a minute?
He did help win a game in 1 week, making a couple of catches. One caught a touchdown, as I recall. It was not activated this week. I'm sure it was a very big blow to him, but I think he understood. This is not the easiest team to come to as a wide receiver. The duties are complex, and you better be on the same page with you-know-who, number 12, or else you're not going to survive very well. The week that he did play and make a contribution, Malcolm Mitchell, who was a rookie that had earned some time, was hurt, and they really have a surplus of wide receivers at the moment. They have plenty with Edelman and Hogan and Amendola and Mitchell. That's four wide receivers to suit up in a game. So they had a choice about how to deploy the personnel, as they do every week. They always have a different look. I don't know that he won't be activated in a postseason in the Super Bowl. You don't know. They might decide that they want him against the matchups that are possible against the Falcons. I don't know. But he'll tell you, I'm sure, that he'll be ready to go next year, as he's had the chance to get the full flavor of what it means and study that playbook and you know, learn how to improvise, learn how to riff with Brady, because you need to do that.
Bob Ryan with us. Before I let you go, what do you make out of the Super Bowl? A couple questions just about the game itself. What are you most intrigued by on this?
Can the Patriots, will they get beaten by one man? And that one man is not Matt Ryan. It's Julio Jones. They did very well with Antonio Brown, although we'll never know what the effect of losing Le'Veon Bell was, and the domino effect of how they were going to go about their offense. But they at least had a quasi-physical matchup in Malcolm Butler, and then by using their great schemes, they were able to contain Brown in this particular game. But Julio Jones defies one-on-one play and matchups, and they don't have a guy that matches up with him. But then again, how many people do? It'll be interesting to see what, if anything, Bill Belichick can do, because he likes to try to take away the primary offensive weapon, and clearly it is Julio Jones. So, and they have other options. We saw Sanu yesterday. Now, that's number one to me. The Patriots are going to do what they're going to do. Good luck to the Falcons to stop them. They're not going to stop them. I think the over-under on the Patriots is going to be about 31 at least. And we all figure it's 58 is the highest over-under ever set so early on in a Super Bowl. I think it's a logical number. But the Patriots, it's about Jones and his fact that he can make a chicken salad out of you know what, throw the ball up, he can get it, he can run through people. He's a handful, and he's going to present a tremendous challenge.
We all want to see Brady and Goodell together, don't we, afterwards?
Oh, it's the one. The moment we've waited for is the moment in which Roger Goodell would be handing over the trophy to Robert Kraft with Tom Brady, Cheshire Cat grinning, smiling in the background. And then who knows where we go from there. The idea that Goodell hasn't had the guts to come to New England and get it over with. Mm-hmm. And he's only going to get booed. He's not going to get, you know, physically accosted. And get booed and make a joke and make a smile and get yourself on the Jumbotron and get it over with. The idea that he would go to Atlanta last week is so synthetic. It is so just cowardly. It's awful. And so, you know, I jokingly tweeted out that he's not going to go to the Super Bowl due to a scheduling conflict. And I've got over 1,000 responses. And that was in the first, you know, couple of hours. So, you know, it's ridiculous. But that is the moment, yes, that we have dreamed of all year long.
Appreciate the time, Bob. Thanks.
You're welcome. Bye-bye.
Bob Ryan there with us from the Boston Globe. Appreciate his time. Paula Bovin is next. News and Notes. And then Daryl Johnston. I'm Brad Sussmat.
Giving you the inside slant on the weekend's biggest stories. It's time for News and Notes with AZ Central sports columnist Paula Bovin. Here again, Brad Sussmat.
I was going to catch up with Paula Bovin, News and Notes, every Monday. AZ Central sports columnist and professor at Arizona State University. How was your weekend?
It was great. Yeah, it was busy, but it was good.
Did you march?
I did.
Really?
And yeah, and I will tell you, I struggled about going only because, you know, at the Republic, AZ Central, they've been understandably very adamant about journalists at the paper not sort of showing, revealing any kind of political leanings, supporting certain groups, because, you know, it is our goal to be as objective as humanly possible when reporting. And, you know, after the paper endorsed Hillary Clinton, you know, the first Democrat ever that's been endorsed, there were death threats and all that, you know, all about that. So I struggled with it, but I sort of also felt this wasn't as much about politics as it was just about supporting women and being part of that group. And I tell you, it was pretty incredible.
Why was it incredible for you?
Because there were, and I think, Brad, part of it comes from growing up in this field of sports where I have many great male peers like you, but early on it was pretty rough. And so I think it to see the people I was walking side by side with, which was, you know, men and young children and people of all different colors and political beliefs and everything else kind of walking arm in arm, and it was peaceful. The police were there. They were very supportive. It just was powerful because there's been so much division in this country. And so it was nice to just, you know, and I know a lot of people had issues with even these marches, but it was just a very empowering, I guess, is the word I'm looking for.
When I get a phone call, as I did Saturday night, from my oldest son who's in Seattle, and he's so excited to tell me how he marched with his wife, and they're both from down
That's
here.
That's great.
Yeah, I mean, it's the process of the march went all the way down to the Space Needle, and there were people getting to the Space Needle, and there are people at the starting line that still hadn't left. That's how big the march was up in Seattle.
Wow.
And so, you know, I get that, and I think this leads perfectly into the news today, some of the news today, that the Sports Reporters was canceled today. So it'll go away in May. And this is a show that we never saw women on, and until just recently. And when there was a woman on there, it was made as a big deal. And you and I have talked for, I don't know, you and I have been together for 20 plus years doing this sort of thing.
Right.
Various outlets. And to me, it's like, what is the problem here? Did you ever look at that show and say, why do we not see females on it? Or is it just kind of, we're used to seeing three white males? Or when John Saunders was hosting it, there was actually an African-American on there. What were your thoughts on that show?
Yeah, I mean, you know, you would see occasionally a Jackie McMullen or someone jump in there. But for, I think, a long time, that wasn't part. It all goes back to this challenge I think people have with women having strong opinions. And I think that's changing, thank goodness. But, you know, I mean, you know the classic stories of the corporate executives, if she's strong and opinionated, a female, she's called a bad word. If it's a man, he's strong and opinionated and good for the company. I mean, it kind of goes back to the whole thing. Are people comfortable with women having strong opinions on television. I think, again, I think that there's a change in that, but I think what you saw on that show was sort of indicative of where things have been in this country.
Well, and I think, too, Paula, that as you and I get older, and we're closing in on 30 now, as we get older, then that our kids are going to look at our generation and say, what were these people all about? Why were they so...
Absolutely.
They just weren't progressive. And it, you guys really are talking about... When I taught last semester, and I was talking about the first females to do play-by-play and why there haven't been more.
Right.
These 20-year-olds are looking at me like, you got to be kidding me. When there was this day and age of Howard Cosell, there was no Jemele Hill.
Right.
And now there are Jemele Hills all over the place. There are Paula Bovins that are all over the place, which is good, I think. So.
Yeah, and one of my happiest moments, and it kind of goes along with this, was my son playing youth sports, and his hockey team and his baseball team both had girls on it, and he didn't even blink. And back in my day, people would have been blinking. And they were, in fact, especially hockey, the better athletes on that team. So, yeah, it is. It is great to see things changing, but there's obviously still work to do, and that's why people were marching. I know there are a lot of people who sometimes feel like everybody is being addressed, but maybe the men or white men, and there's a lot of sort of, I think, backlash with that right now. But the reality is, I think there's still challenges women are facing, and that's why they're marching.
There are people watching this right now that are screaming, just get back into the kitchen and wash dishes.
Yeah.
And you've heard that line forever, right? I mean, you've...
Oh, my gosh, yeah. I would say it's been about 2 years.
Yeah.
But they literally use the get back in the kitchen thing. It's just so funny to me because it's such a stereotype, and it's just so ridiculous because I'm not a great cook. So really, you don't want me back in the kitchen, honestly.
That's great. Let's get into some things on the sports end. And I want to start with Chip Lindsey leaving ASU. And I'll get over to Trier and U of A in a minute because you wrote about it yesterday. But at some point, is there anybody that's going to wave their arms up and down saying, we have a problem over here. Todd Graham cannot keep assistant coaches. And instead, we're getting fed the narrative, well, they're leaving for better jobs. You have to understand, Todd has developed them here. They didn't make a bowl game last year. So,
right.
What do you make out of Chip Lindsey now pulling the ripcord? A very good offensive coordinator that was here a year, and he's like, I'm out. I'm gone. See ya.
Yeah, if I know it's a great job, and I'm sure the money is great, and it's just a better circumstance to go at a place where football is king. But at some point, you think people would want to – you want to create an environment at ASU where people want to stay. And so he is. He's hiring great coaches who are getting hired, and that's good. But I think where you're going to – if there's going to be voices complaining and loud fans, et cetera, it's going to be after this season. If they do fine – if they do well, people aren't going to care who the assistant coaches and coordinators were. If they struggle, I think everybody's going to go back to look at the collection of coaches that have moved on and say, what's wrong with this program?
Don't you think there's something in Ray Anderson's office saying, why is my football coach keep losing assistants, or no?
Yeah. Oh, yeah. I'm sure there's concern. I think they're going to use this season to measure just how impactful that is. But the numbers have been large. And again, I think one thing Graham has done very well, and he's sort of establishing that coaching tree, is he does hire good coaches that get jobs and move on.
Mm-hmm.
But it's been such a same amount, such a big amount this past year. I think there's definitely a little bit of a red flag.
Okay. Alonzo Trier returns to the court for U of A. You and I are on the same page on this one. You wrote about it yesterday. There's some question marks about, the timing and all of that from my point of view. But, yeah, it's good that he's back. I didn't make too much out of Saturday's game. It's mid-late January. Stub your toe here, an injury there, and the next time these two teams meet, it was a fun game to watch, and that was it for me. Nothing more, nothing less. You on the same page?
I disagree with you a bit, Brad. I just think that I thought U of A really showed me something. I mean, the way that Miller has managed this rotation has been incredible with people in and out. Trier, I think, gave him the energy boost. I just think I did not think they were anywhere near a Final Four team. I think you can start having that conversation. Maybe still a Sweet 16 or possibly Elite 8, but something I didn't even consider this season, I did after seeing that game, because UCLA is really good, and I know they've got some defensive weaknesses, but they are a tough team to match up with, and I thought U of A was prepared really well. And they got big guys, which really helps in the postseason.
I think it's Oregon and the Dylan Brooks injury is significant, and UCLA and U of A, all three of those teams could be Final Four teams, but Markkanen twists an ankle, Trier goes down with something else. I just don't see where I just didn't get all that much. It was fun to watch. It was really good basketball, and that was it.
Yeah,
and
it was.
And it made the Lonzo Ball sweepstakes for the Suns that much more important.
Oh, my gosh.
I think
he's
good. I'm on that wagon now. Like, oh, you guys won a couple games over the weekend? Come on. Don't do that. Come on.
I know. They've won like 3 of 5. They're starting to look pretty good. I know. Someone messaged me today. They're ruining everything, you know, by playing well.
All right. Super Bowl matchup. The games yesterday I didn't think were any good. Is there buzz in your mind around this game, this matchup, Tom Brady and trying to get the commissioner to give him a trophy and so he can look him in the eye afterwards? And that's the big storyline buildup. I don't know. What do you make out of the Super Bowl?
Yeah, I mean, I can't say I'm giddy about it, you know, maybe because it's New England in the mix. I am intrigued by this sort of, you know, an offense that's, I think, scoring, 33.8 Atlanta versus a defense allowing only 15.6. That's going to be a really intriguing matchup. I can't say, though, you know, I'm sort of giddy about seeing the Patriots, even with this, you know, secondary storyline. I'm not that giddy about seeing them again, so kind of meh.
All right. Larry Fitzgerald, do you have a gut here in the next week, 2 weeks, 3 weeks?
I think he's staying. No inside information. I just kind of feel like I didn't feel like he was ready to walk away from football. I think it's a hard, hard thing for athletes to do, and I just don't think he's reached that point. That's my gut feeling.
All right. Stay well. Thanks for the time, as always.
All right, Brad.
It's Paula Bova, News and Notes, AZ Central sports columnist. Appreciate her time. Sports360AZ.com. We partner with the Arizona Republic, AZ Central Sports. Daryl Moose Johnston is scheduled to join us here in a few minutes, and we'll talk with him from the NFL on Fox about the Super Bowl matchup and much more. Stay with us. Let's talk further about the Super Bowl now. Daryl Moose Johnston is with us, NFL on Fox. And, of course, Daryl is part of the Super Bowl festivities with the Taste of the NFL, which is always a great event. Several chefs here in the Valley and in Scottsdale head to that every year. Eddie Matney's one of them. And there's a lot of Phoenix and Arizona connections to that. Jordan Sparks is part of this as well. Of course, Valley resident. Wanted to have Moose on to talk about this matchup with the Super Bowl and other things all around what's taking place in Houston. Here's Daryl Moose Johnston. How are you?
I'm good. How are you doing?
Doing good. I'm sitting here looking back on the games yesterday and wondering, were they terrific championship games? Were they okay championship games? You know, I've had both ways from fans this morning, Daryl. What was your view of yesterday?
Well, I think if you're an Atlanta fan or a Patriot fan, they were excellent championship games. I expected I hoped for more competitive games. I was hoping for, you know, Dallas, Green Bay, Kansas City, Pittsburgh type games. I've always loved championship weekend. And, you know, yesterday, you know, from a neutral fan's position, it was kind of boring. And that's because Atlanta played so well and New England played so well. So, you know, I think we've got a good matchup, but I was kind of disappointed in the level of play during the course of the game. So, you know, I love divisional round because you got four, and then championship weekend is even better because you usually have two really, really good matchups, and it just didn't pan out for us yesterday.
Yeah. So looking ahead to Houston, we'll get into the game itself, but you're doing Taste of the NFL, which is a cool event. Would you tell us about that? Because a lot of people from here are going down there.
Oh, yeah. Please join us on Saturday night. You know, if you're there for the whole week, there's going to be a number of parties that go on. Obviously, the game, you know, I've always felt, and I stumbled on the Taste of the NFL, you know, gosh, probably going back now about 15, 18 years ago. And it's just an incredible event. It's going to be the Saturday night before the game. It's going to be out at the University of Houston. It's been dubbed Party with a Purpose. Mm. The origin of Taste of the NFL came out of having the Super Bowl in Minnesota and knowing that you had to have some other things for the fans to do in an indoor setting. And they came up with the concept of Taste of the NFL. And it's one chef and one player from all 32 teams. It's grown. You've got some legends guys that are there. So you get an opportunity to mix and mingle with some NFL players from present and past. You've got great food, great entertainment. The band Perry is going to be there performing. So it's just a great night. It's kind of a great night to kick everything off on Saturday and get ready for the big game on Sunday.
Yeah. Are you a chef yourself there, Daryl? Do you go around and sample some of these things or do you get out of the way?
Oh, gosh, yes.
Yeah?
Yeah, I do. Yeah. I do. And I kind of starve myself all day Saturday. and they're proportioned very well. So they're taste. They're exactly what you said. And with the title, of the event, Taste of the NFL. So you get little tastes from all the different teams around the country. And there's a lot of competition. They take a lot of pride in what they do. So the gentleman who represents the Dallas Cowboys is Kent Rathbun, and he's, one of the big chefs here in town locally. He and his brother actually knocked off Morimoto on Iron Chef one time.
So, oh, wow.
That's the caliber of the chef that's going to be at these events. And, going back, 26 years now, when Taste of the NFL first started out, you had guys like Bobby Flay, Emeril Lagasse, back in the day before they became the big rock stars of the culinary world. They got their start at Taste of the NFL. So hopefully we're going to be turning some more of these younger chefs out to some national acclaim here as their careers move forward.
Breaking it down on the chef end, that's impressive. That's good. Good stuff there. Daryl Moose Johnson.
I'm a foodie. I'm a closet foodie. Yeah. I'm a big-time closet foodie.
Nothing wrong with that. Daryl Moose Johnston, NFL on Fox, with us as we look ahead to the Super Bowl. All right, big picture view. What do you see Atlanta against New England? What's the most intriguing storylines to you, Moose?
I think the big thing is, I think everybody has to remember that Bill Belichick was the architect of the defense of the New York Giants the year that they took the Buffalo Bills and the K-gun and held them to 19 points. In the Super Bowl. Now, that was a complementary style of play. Obviously, the offense and the running game played a huge part in that. But Buffalo had scored 44 in the divisional round, had scored 51 in the championship game, and was held to 19. So, Bill Belichick has done this a number of times. Everybody hears the stories. He's going to take away your strength and exploit your weakness. I think the challenge is, when you talk about Atlanta, obviously you immediately go to Julio Jones, mm-hmm. the one strength you'd like to take away. But there's so many other weapons that are there. I just Matt Ryan threw touchdown passes to 13 different receivers during the course of the year to set a new NFL record. Mohamed Sanu, Taylor Gabriel, the tight ends with Austin Hooper and Toy Lolo. And we haven't even really gotten into Tevin Coleman and Devontae Freeman. So I think that this is going to be very difficult. A lot of people are really looking forward to the matchup of the Atlanta Falcon offense and the Patriot defense. I am as well. And more from the intriguing standpoint, does Bill Belichick now even take this to the next level and understand by personnel formation, when Julio Jones is the biggest threat? And then at other times, maybe it's Devontae Freeman who's the biggest threat. And that this is not, we're not putting the stamp on one guy for 60 minutes. We're actually going to be rotating who we feel the biggest threat is by down and distance, by formation and personnel group. I think that New England is as prepared as anybody. And when they talk about that week-to-week game plan, I'm really excited to see what they do there. And then the other matchup, the other side of the ball, I think Atlanta's defense has really improved down the stretch. They played well against a Green Bay team that was very, very hot. They took advantage of some mistakes that the Packers had that they didn't have against the Cowboys the week before, the miss by Mason Crosby, the fumble by Ripkowski when that game was still manageable for them. But that's what Atlanta has been doing. I thought the play by Jalen Collins was excellent. You've got a guy, having a great run, physical run, trying to get extra yards, and you just come in and you just rip that ball out of his grasp. But, right. It wasn't poor ball security by Aaron Ripkowski. It was just a great play by Jalen Collins. And that was really kind of the difference for the Atlanta defense the latter part of the season. They were taking the ball away. So you're going up against one of the best. And really, in my opinion, I really think that Tom Brady has, really become the greatest of all time. I know that really? There's a lot of Joe Montana fans that will say he's still that guy. Some guys will bring up Terry Bradshaw. But Tom Brady has done what he has accomplished in an era where free agency and the way business is done in the NFL was structured to prohibit somebody from doing what New England has done. And Tom has been the constant with changing pieces around him his entire career. You know, he didn't have a Lynn Swann and a John Stallworth and a Franco Harris behind him, you know, for multiple years. He didn't have Jerry Rice and John Taylor and Brent Jones and you know, Roger Craig and Tom Rathman for a number of years. You know, Tom has been the constant, and the pieces have moved around him. And it's just amazing what he's been able to do, whether it's a running game and a defense along with his play, whether it's two tight ends, Randy Moss on the outside, Edelman in the slot, Chris Hogan, really?
Yeah,
Chris Hogan is going to go 9 for 180 and 2 touchdowns against the Pittsburgh Steelers. You know, that's Tom Brady. And that's why I think that that he has to be considered the greatest of all time. So how does he perform against this Atlanta defense? It's very young, very fast. They have an edge rusher in Vic Beasley Jr., who you have to account for. They've got Dwight Freeney on the other side, who you still have to account for. They've got good push in the middle to collapse the pocket from the inside. But their speed at the linebacker level, they've got good corners, they've got good safety play. I think that that's going to be a matchup that a lot of people are going to kind of, you know, everyone wants to see, can New England slow down the Atlanta Falcons offense?
Right.
I think you got to go to the other side, too, and say, can the Atlanta Falcons defense slow down that New England offense?
One other question, I'll let you go, and I appreciate your time with Daryl Moose Johnston. And that is Dan Quinn in all this. So we're going to hear all about Tom Brady and Commissioner Goodell standing at the podium with Robert Kraft if they win for the next 2 weeks. I got it. We're going to hear all about Belichick. We're going to hear about Brady's legacy. But Dan Quinn comes in, and he gets the Falcons finally over the hump. Tell me about him a little bit. You covered him, of course, through the season. What strikes you about him and what he'll try to do against New England?
Well, here's one of the big things. You know, there's going to be a lot of talk about New England or New England's experience over the Atlanta Falcons.
Mm-hmm.
When we went to our first Super Bowl, I can't even remember the experience on our roster. I would dare to say right now, I don't think we had anybody that had Super Bowl experience in 1992, and the Bills were making their third straight. You know, experience is not a factor in this game, and really. What happens is it's going to be set by the head coach, and Jimmy Johnson and his staff did a great job of keeping our schedule exactly the same, you know, not making it appear to be a game that was any bigger than the games we had played up until that point. Dan Quinn, I think people have to realize this is Dan Quinn's third time in the Super Bowl in the last 4 years.
Right.
You know, his first time as a head coach, but he's no stranger to the schedule changes, the routine interruptions. As a defensive coordinator for the Seattle Seahawks, he's going to be very aware, and he will call Pete Carroll and get some advice. He's going to reach out to all his friends. But I think the experience factor is going to be something that's very, very overrated in this game because Dan has it as a defensive coordinator. He'll understand the challenges of being in the Super Bowl city and how that can disrupt your practice schedule. But what he has done in 2 years, his ability to take a franchise that seemed to be going the opposite direction, kind of halt that, get it refocused, bring it back, and really bounce back from, you know, a 5-0 start to an 8-8 season last year, and then get them to where they are this year. Just subtle tweaks of the roster, changing that culture, getting everybody to buy into it, getting some really, really good young talent that fits what he wants to do. I think very, very impressive of what Thomas Dimitroff and Dan Quinn have accomplished in Atlanta. And I think this is going to be a great matchup. I really do. I think this is kind of, you know, you go back and you see what New England has done all these years. This kind of reminds me a little bit of what happened when New England played Carolina. I don't think a lot of people thought that was going to be a tight fit game. You know, the experience there of the Patriots over a Carolina team. You know, just, you know, the Tom Brady, you know, the mystique that he brings to that game, and it ends up being 32-29. So, you know, I've got my fingers crossed that we're going to have something similar to that. You know, after the playoffs this year, we've had 10 playoff games, and 8 of them have been double digit victories, and pretty much, game in hand, you know, relatively early, during the course of the 60 minutes. I'm hoping that this game becomes similar to the Dallas Green Bay game, the Kansas City Pittsburgh game, or it's not decided until right down there at the end of the game.
Daryl, appreciate the time and the insight. Good stuff there. Thanks.
You got it. Take care.
Take care. There's Daryl Moose Johnston with us for a couple of minutes. NFL on Fox. Good stuff there. Sports360AZ.com. We partner with the Arizona Republic, AZ Central Sports. There's plenty of content up on our website right now that you can check out. Pro, college, high school, college, pro. If you're just joining us, this show repeats over and over for the next 24 hours. Here on the stream, we have our TV show, Brad Sussmat Football AZ, that is on Fox Sports Arizona. It airs Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursdays, 14 airings per week. Jared Nielsen's our chairman of the board. Eric Sorensen, senior executive vice president of Everything or Nothing, depending on the day. Thanks for being with us.